Amen. Turn to Proverbs 11. Proverbs 11. We're going to look at two or three verses here in the book of Proverbs tonight where the word integrity is used. And I want you to see something about what the Bible says about integrity from this book of Proverbs. It appears also in the book of Psalms, and the same word is used in a number of other places. But integrity is like honesty. It's like accountability, transparency, responsibility. There are a lot of words which could be used in some contexts as synonyms for integrity. But what I want you to understand tonight about integrity is revealed in these verses. Proverbs 11 and verse 3, "The integrity of the upright shall guide them, but the perverseness of transgressors shall destroy them." Now notice what is contrasted. On the one hand, the integrity of the upright. On the other hand, the perverseness of sinners. Integrity is the opposite of perverseness. The upright are contrasted with transgressors. Those that do the right thing versus those that do the wrong thing. Those that do the right do it because they have integrity. Those that do the wrong thing do it because they are perverse. There's something wrong with them. They're unnatural, abnormal, not right. Proverbs 19:1 uses the word again. It says, "Better is the poor that walketh in his integrity than he that is perverse in his lips and is a fool." Notice what it contrasts again. It would be better for a man to be a man of his word, even if he had nothing, than to be a man of perverse lips and be a fool in doing so to try to get everything. It's better to say what you mean and mean what you say than to say what is expected and mean nothing. It is better to be honest and have integrity and be responsible for what you do and say than the alternative. Chapter 20 and verse 7 uses the word a third time. "The just man walketh in his integrity. His children are blessed after him." In other words, a man who has integrity is a man who demonstrates that he is truly justified. A just man in the Bible is a man who is justified before God. He does what is just and what is right. And he sets a good example for his children. And his children reap the blessings of his integrity. Now, what do we mean by integrity? There are several things that a person has to have in order to have integrity. I use an illustration that I've used on a number of occasions that Bernie, I know he knows it's coming. He used that word in a way that really helped me understand it. Several years ago when we were working on my house, bought this house over there where we live now across from the church, the office buildings, and we were remodeling it. It didn't have enough stairs in it. And so we reframed the lower floor and we put in an upper floor. And boy, we really put it together solid. We put the floor joist for the upstairs floor in there, and then we put down plywood. And everywhere the plywood touched the ceiling joist, we put construction glue. This real heavy construction glue is called Max Bond or something like that. We put that down on top of the floor joist, and then we put that plywood down there to it. So it was just fastened to that wood and wasn't coming loose. When that stuff dries, it's stronger than the wood itself. And then we put down particle board, 5/8 particle board on top of that. And we glued the particle board to the plywood. And then we nailed all that together two times. Nailed the plywood down with the glue under it. Nailed the particle board down on top of the plywood. We nailed all that down. And I says, "Boy, this ought to be a strong floor." He said, this floor is going to have a lot of integrity. And I thought, you know, he's right. That's a good meaning of that word. And it does. That floor does not squeak. Now, when I put my other addition in, the little boys' room up there where they are in the attic, I didn't do it the same way. I didn't glue it down, and the floor squeaks. It doesn't have as much integrity. Now, it's a strong floor, and it's got all they need. Anybody that gets tall enough to damage the floor won't be able to fit in the room, but or heavy enough because it's so low. It's only 6 feet at the peak. It's back there in the attic. But the reason that we did that is because we wanted it to have a lot of integrity. What do we mean by integrity? Strength, character, stability. All of those things are implied in the word integrity. inherent, internal strength. Now, what is integrity even when we apply it to a man? I think one of the main things that's lacking in people in our society today is integrity. People just don't do what they say they'll do. People don't mean what they say when they say it. They don't say what they mean. And the reason they don't do that often is they don't know how to express themselves. We have people who are college graduates today who are illiterate. We live in a society where a man's word does not mean very much anymore. Now, that's wrong. We ought not to justify that kind of behavior. And it ought especially not to be that way among Christian people. I hear people all over town say from time to time, well, you know, you can always tell those Christians, boy, they never do. Now, what are they saying? Are they saying that Christians have less integrity than anybody else? No. They're saying that if anybody should have integrity, it ought to be a Christian. If anybody does what he says he's going to do, it ought to be a Christian. We are accountable for what we say. You say, well, now, wait a minute, preacher. Sometimes I make mistakes. Sometimes I meant to do something, but it just wasn't possible. Well, how can you maintain your integrity without really knowing the future? That's what I want you to understand tonight. There are four steps that you can follow that will help you to maintain your integrity regardless of what the future holds. Step one, make a commitment. You make a commitment. Now, you can make that commitment by an overt statement, or you can make a commitment by implication. Sometimes we make commitments to our children without realizing that we're doing it. Our children will say, can we do so-and-so? We want to avoid making a commitment. So we say, we'll see. Now, what does that mean? That means no, but I don't want to argue with you, so I'm not going to tell you right now. Okay? Or it means yes, but I don't want you to bug me to death, so I'm not going to give you a commitment right now. It means I don't want to get into it with you right now. Now, why doesn't a parent say, I don't want to get into that with you right now. Here's what I want you to do. Why doesn't a parent say that? Because they don't want to have a hassle with the child. Why don't they want to have a hassle with the child? Because the child badgers them and forces his way and controls the parent, and the parent doesn't control the child. We end up getting ourselves in a whole lot of messes with our children because we try to avoid doing what we just ought to do, which is just make them obey us. You see? Teach them to have some integrity. It's difficult, if not impossible, for a parent who has no integrity to inculcate integrity into his children. You see? Because the things that parent would do that would promote integrity in the child will not be done by the parent who doesn't have integrity. You follow that? So, first thing you do is make a commitment. Now, when you make a commitment to somebody, whether you actually state that you're going to do a thing or whether it's just implied that you're going to do it, there are several things involved in that. One is your expression of faith that it can be done. I believe this is possible. I believe it's necessary. And I'll do it. All of those things are inherent in making a commitment. I will meet you at a certain time at a certain place. I'll do that. I think it's possible. I think it ought to be done. I'll do it. I've made a commitment. Now, so far, I still have integrity. There are several more things that have to take place, though, for me to keep my integrity. What do you suppose they are? I've got to do what I said or let you know why I didn't as soon as I know I can't. Step one is make a commitment. Let people know what you plan to do. Don't make them have to come and search you out and pull a commitment out of you. Go ahead and take the initiative for what you are responsible for. Now, a lot of people want to avoid responsibility, and they don't want to be held accountable for performing a responsibility, so they wait until other people come and ask them to do something, or tell them to do something, or find them. Some of you people here who have people work for you, you know people like that. There's some people where whenever you want them to do a job, you got to go find them. And they're never doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're always doing something else. They've always got some kind of a big excuse. I told you about my friend one time. I left him on one job. I was in school. We were doing some landscaping jobs. And I left him on one job. And I went to do another job. And I came back and he was nowhere in sight. So I got down there in the ditch and I started working on this job that he was supposed to be doing. And a few minutes he sauntered up with a piece of straw between his teeth. And I said, where have you been? He said, "Oh, I went down to the park to pray." I said, "Let me tell you something, Buster. The only praying you're going to do is going to get anywhere today is going to be on the end of that shovel handle." I believe that. Why? He wasn't in God's will. He wasn't on praying ground. He was supposed to be in that ditch working. Now, there's an awful lot of people make pious excuses. I'm for praying. But I'm not using praying as an excuse for loafing. You see? I'm not for using praying as a lie to justify stealing somebody's time that they're paying you for. I'm not saying you ought to never pray on the job. But if you're supposed to be doing something, don't go do something else. And because you think it's better, justify not doing what you're supposed to do. You understand what I'm saying? Listen, Christian people can always find legitimate things to do instead of what they ought to do. Is that true or not? I mean, I go in and I sit down at my desk, and sometimes I just think, I don't want to get into this. I got this whole folder full of stuff I got to work on here, and I got all these letters I got to write right here, and I got all this stuff I got to do right there. And I can sit there and straighten my paper clips up for 30 minutes, trying to avoid getting to it. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, I can sit there and make everything all nice and neat. Why? Because I want to be a good steward, and I believe that you ought to be neat. And you know, I can find all kinds of ways to make it sound spiritual to sit there and avoid my work. Can you do that, ladies? You ever avoid things, put them off, not do them? You know you're supposed to. You know your husband's counting on it, or whoever it is that you're accountable to, they're counting on you getting that job done, and you find something else that you'd rather do. Listen, I am convinced. Now, you may not accept what I'm going to say, but I am convinced that this is true. I am convinced that the great majority of people in our society today spend more time doing what they want to do than what they were hired to do. There are some jobs where you can't get away with that, but they are usually the lower paying wage jobs where you've got a supervisor breathing down your neck. You know why most people don't like jobs like that? Because they don't want to do what somebody else tells them to do all the time. Now, there are people who'd like to say, "I don't want to work for another person. I don't want to be paid by the piece. I don't want to be paid by the performance of my job. I'd like to be out where I can work on my own." Why? So I can do what I want to do. That's generally what that means. Now, not always. And there are lots of people that do far more who are self-employed than some people who work for wages and work for others. I understand that. But in our society today, as a general rule, you hear this among people. "Well, you know, we just had this personality conflict. We just couldn't get along. So I'm going to go to work for myself. I'm going to be self-employed." Why? Because you think you can make more money? Because you think you can do a better job? Or so you can get up when you want to and go in when you want to, if you want to, and do what you want to? You see? And a lot of times people that couldn't work for somebody else find out that they can't work for themselves either. And here's a fellow who will do a job. You know, listen, I used to run into this all the time. I was just trying to cut grass and make a living doing that while I was going through school. And it was hard to keep my word. You say, why? I'll tell you why. Because there are 5 work days in a week plus Saturday. That was 6 days. So I'd book 6 days worth of work. Only one problem is it would rain once in a while. And the jobs that I had scheduled, I could not do when it rained. And you know something else that happens when it rains? Grass grows shortly thereafter. So not only did I miss the yards I was supposed to cut on the day that it was raining, but there was more grass to cut and it took me longer to get caught up. Now, I never would think in terms of, well, I'm going to allow me 1 or 2 days to catch up now and then. No, I didn't want to do that. Because a lot of times folks that are employed for themselves always figure their income at the absolute maximum and their outgo at the absolute minimum. Why? Because they're always prejudiced in favor of themselves. That's the reason they're self-employed in the first place. Not all of them, but some of them. That's the way I was. I learned a lot of hard lessons that way. I wasn't making any money. I had a lot of money going through my hands. I mean, I was collecting an awful lot and paying an awful lot out. And when I got done and looked at it at the end of the week, I hadn't made much money. I sure had done a whole lot of business. And a lot of people that worked for me had made some money, but I hadn't made much. Why? I was too busy feeling like I owned something. You see? I was too busy enjoying the fact that I was in charge of something to realize I was going broke. You understand what I'm talking about? Integrity makes a commitment. It says, "I'll do this. I believe it's possible. I believe it's necessary. I'll do it." It makes that commitment. Not trying to find ways to get out of responsibility, but it accepts responsibility. That's step 1. Step 2. Once a person makes a commitment, what does he do next? He works as hard as he possibly can to do what he said he would do. He works as hard as he possibly can to do what he said he would do. Now that sounds so simple. There are people who come to me and they say, "Pastor, I just don't know what I'm going to do. I have debts, I have bills. I just don't know what I'm going to do, and I don't know how I'm going to get my bills paid." I got a simple 4-step formula for you to tell you how to deal with your financial problems. Now, I know we got the financial workshop, and I don't want to steal Dr. Harris's thunder, and we got the Burkett videotape and workbooks and all the rest of it, and we can counsel you from now till this time next year. But I want to give you 4 simple steps. Number 1, immediately stop spending more than you bring in. Immediately stop it. Number 2, don't buy anything not necessary to sustain life. Number 3, pray and ask God for the money to pay your bills. Number 4, when God gives you the money, pay the bills. That is so simple. But you know what people do? They don't do that. They won't stop spending more than they're bringing in. They do buy things that are not necessary to sustain life. They pray and ask God for the money, but when they get it, they use it for something else. That's not integrity. Somebody says, "Well, I need $75. You might not need $75. If you really knew, you might only need $57. But you pray and ask God for $75 and He sends you $57. You say, "That must not be it. Honey, let's go to the mall." Huh? That's not integrity, is it? People don't pray specifically enough that if God answered their prayer, they wouldn't recognize it if it came. You see what I'm saying? 4 simple little steps. Don't quit spending more than you bring in. Don't buy anything not necessary to sustain life. Pray and ask God for the money. When He gives you the money, pay the bill. That sounds so simple. Why do more people not do it? Because they don't want to do it. Now, how'd they get those bills? They made those bills by making a commitment. But now, they're not doing everything they can to keep that commitment. Listen, there are plenty of people in our society today, and many of them Christians, who believe that if the bank's stupid enough to loan you money, that's their problem. You understand what I'm talking about? I deserve as much credit as I can get. That's the way a lot of people think. If you don't think so, you just listen to some of the advertisements on TVDO. Are you frustrated that you can't get the same credit cards that other people have? You can send $500 to this bank and we'll pay you 0 interest in it, but we'll give you a credit card with a $500 line of credit. And then nobody will know that you're not using credit just like everyone else. You heard those ads? Appeals to the ego. It's a certain sort of power. People like to have a pocket full of credit cards so they can feel like they've got power. Well, the power is headed in the wrong direction, I'm afraid. A lot of things that people want, when they get it, they don't have it, it has them. You know what I'm saying? You young people, I've heard people come to me and say, "Oh yeah, I just can't get any credit." Thank God. Well, we're newlyweds. We just can't get any credit. Well, all you got to do is just pull a stopper once, you know, and then when somebody finds out that you're interested in it, everybody will want to give it to you. That's why so many marriages break up about the 7th year. You know why? Because it takes you about 7 years to get in and out of debt twice, or to get into debt twice. It takes you about 3 years to get head over heels in debt. It takes you about that long to get your credit cards and fill them up to the bulging point where you can't make the payments on them anymore. And you can put $1,500, $2,000 worth of credit on a credit card where you only pay about $20 a month, which will barely pay the interest. Barely pay the interest. And you'll have that debt for the rest of your life if you don't make significant payments against it. So you fill up all the credit cards. And then all of your extra money is taken in making payments. And then what? Well, then about 3.5 years out there somewhere, you get some kind of a windfall, some kind of a major thing. You find some kind of a way to go out and take all of those, you know, that friendly Bob Evans service or whatever it is, you know, is that Bob Adams or whatever his name was? Bob Evans is the sausage guy. But anyway, you take all of those nagging little debts and turn them into one back-breaking loan. Okay, and you consolidate your bills, which gives you some breathing room. Now, instead of paying out $200 a month in payments, you're only paying $75 a month. So what do you get? You get $125 worth more credit payments to make. So you can increase your indebtedness by another $7,000, $8,000, $9,000. So you take out that one big loan, you get more credit, and then the next time, you can't get credit anymore. And after about 5 to 6 years, after you've gotten into debt the second time and you can't get out, start taking it out on each other. In about 7 years, that's when the average couple divorces. That's tragic, isn't it? Why? People said they would do something and they didn't do what they said they would do. They got themselves into debt without any thought of how they were going to get out of it. They got married for better or for worse, and they meant better. For richer or for poorer, they meant richer. in sickness and in health. And they met not too sick. Isn't that right? They didn't count on anything really serious happening. That's what most people want. We don't love each other anymore. So what? Listen, this whole business of compatibility is a bunch of nonsense. You can live with people if you have commitment, whether you're compatible or not. If you don't think so, didn't you have brothers and sisters? You can live with the people you have to live with. Isn't that right? Sure you can. If you make up your mind to, people are about as happy as they want to be. You make a commitment, you work as hard as you possibly can to keep that commitment. That's step two. What's step three? Let the person know that you made the commitment to immediately when you find out you're not going to be able to do exactly what you said. Number one, commitment. Number two, effort. Number three, communication. Let the person know immediately, as soon as you find out you're not going to be able to keep that commitment. Now, if most people would get in the habit of informing those they've made commitments to immediately when they find out they're not going to be able to keep the commitment, they'd never make the commitment in the first place. That's true with debts. If people would sit down and say, you know, I really don't have any idea how I'm going to pay this debt. Therefore, I shouldn't make this debt. But the average person says, all I know is I got to find a way to pay yesterday's debt. So if I can get some credit today, I'll worry about this debt tomorrow. That's presumption. That's the way most people borrow money. Do I speak the truth? So you let the person know. Now let me give you an illustration. We're talking about borrowing money here. Let's suppose, for example, okay, that Brother Cursip over here loans me $10. Okay? And I go up to him and I say, Dan, I got to have $10. I got to have it bad. Now, all I know is that I need $10. Now, in order to get the $10, I got to tell him something. What? When I'm going to pay him back. Well, I figure, okay, this is Wednesday. Friday, okay? Surely by Friday something will happen. I mean, you know, I'll hit the lottery or something will work out for me. I mean, you know, because, you know, since I'm the center of the universe and everything has to come to me, you know, everything's, my luck's going to change, you know, isn't that right? Isn't that the way most people think? So I'll be able to get this $10. So I'll tell you what, Dan, you loan me the $10, I'll pay you on Friday. All right, in the first place, I didn't really make a commitment. I don't have any integrity already, but he doesn't know it yet. I don't have any integrity because I promised him that I was going to do something when I have no way of knowing whether or not I'm going to be able to do it or not. Now, if I borrow the $10 and I don't have any way of knowing how I'm going to pay him back, what do you think is going to happen on Friday? I'm going to avoid Dan. Dan's going to avoid the conflict because he's hoping that I'll come through. But finally, along about Monday, he sees me and he says, hey, what about that $10? I missed you on Friday. And then I've had all weekend to get my story together, right? Oh, listen, man, I tell you. And then here I got my story all ready. Now, at this point, Dan starts to think, this guy doesn't have any integrity. He doesn't do what he said he would do. So you know what I do to keep him from thinking I don't have any integrity, which I don't? I tell another one. Tell you what, this Friday, there it'll come. Now, sooner or later, Dan may think, well, he doesn't have any integrity. I can kiss that $10 goodbye. So the second Friday comes around, and guess what? I go up and I act like I'm doing him a favor to pay him back his $10. Now, I give him his $10. Or maybe he has to come and find me the next Monday, and I give him his $10. And he says, thank you very much. Now, you know what the biggest mistake I'm fixing to make is? Thinking that paying the debt has reestablished my integrity. There's two problems. One, the debt. Two, the integrity. I do not reestablish my integrity by merely being forced to do what I agreed to do in the first place. I got to reestablish my integrity. So a lot of people think that they maintain their integrity simply when they finally get around to doing what they said they would do. Integrity communicates. Step one, you make a commitment. Step two, you work as hard as you possibly can to keep that commitment. Step three, you let the person know. You communicate with him. You inform him when you're not going to be able to keep the commitment that you said you would. Okay? Step number four, learn from the lesson. Learn from it. Some people don't learn from it. There are people that come to the Five Loaves Ministry all the time. They never, ever have money for milk for the baby and food for the family, but they always have money for cigarette and liquor. Why is that? Why do you suppose a fellow can always find money when he wants to smoke or drink, but he can't find money when he wants to buy his child some food? Why is that? Now let's use some common sense. Everybody knows why it is. It's because he's using the money that God gave him to buy food for the baby, to buy liquor and tobacco. That's why. Now, this text here says that a just man walketh in his integrity and his children are blessed after him. If a man is not just and does not walk in integrity, what happens to his children? They're not blessed. Now, most of those things in the Bible that talk to us about being charitable and taking care of the poor are talking about people who have legitimate needs that are destitute, or because of some lack or ignorance in their life, they find themselves in a place where they need help. It was not talking about this whole community of professional bums that we have in our American society today. These people who make their living moving from one city to the next, begging from one church to the next, going to God's people, trying to make them feel guilty. Some of the scripture those guys know. Well, you're a Christian person. You're supposed to take compassion on the poor. And they'll quote scripture to you while they try to make you feel guilty for why you won't feed them while they drink up everything they make. Now, I'd rather be taken once in a while than miss a legitimate responsibility before the Lord. I really would. I'd rather give food to a fellow that didn't deserve it than miss giving it to the fellow that did deserve it. But if I know that a fellow is a drunkard, I'm sorry for his children. But there comes a point in time where if I continue to feed his kids, I help him be a drunk. That's a tragic situation to be in. It really is. Awful. You say, what's the easy answer? There isn't any easy answer to that one. You've got to do more than just give people money. You've got to pray for them and have a burden for them. You've got to talk to them and teach them and keep giving them accountability. And eventually, if you'll keep telling them the truth, they'll quit coming around. You know, that's about all you can do. But integrity starts with a commitment, effort, communication, learning. That's it. Now, let's take that same scenario. Let's say I go up to Dan and I borrow $10 from him. And I say, all right, Dan, I need $10. And he knows I need $10 and he loans it to me. And I know I've got $10 coming in on Friday. Okay? I hate to use that illustration. Okay? But that's the best one I can think of at the moment. So, let's say that Joe back here owes me $10, okay? He's a guy without any integrity this time. All right, he owes me $10, and he's supposed to pay me on Thursday so I can pay Dan back on Friday. Okay? Now, I've got some reasonable way of knowing I can keep my commitment, right? So, he says, fine. Only problem comes around, Thursday, Joe doesn't show up with the $10. Okay? Now, when should I call Dan? Next Monday, right? When? All right. When did I find out I'm not going to get my $10 from Joe? When should I call Dan? Okay. Now, if I call Dan up on Thursday and say, Joe was supposed to see me with $10. He has not shown up. Now, I don't say, so Dan, I'm going to tell you what, it's between you and Joe. Count me out. No, that's... My debt is to Dan. Okay? You see? And Joe's debt is to me. So I can't, you know, that's high finance, but it doesn't work that way in real life, okay? I mean, my bank does that to me. Oh, they sell my mortgage to this guy and that guy and all the rest of them, you know, and how it works. And you just keep sending it in. But in this situation, if I'm going to maintain my integrity, see, and I can't lose my integrity if Joe does. If Joe says, you know, I'm sorry, I can't do what I said I'd do, and he loses integrity in my sight. Now, am I going to base my integrity on his? No, I've got to protect my own. So I go to Dan and I say, look, it's Thursday. I expected $10 to come in. Here's what I'm going to do. I do not have the $10 coming in from the source I thought I was going to. But I have an item here that's worth $10, and I'm going to try my best to sell it or do whatever I can to get that $10 for you by tomorrow. If I am not able to get it for you by tomorrow, I will come back to you with a plan of what I plan to do about it. So meanwhile, I'm going to go to do two things. I'm going to try to sell this thing I got, and I'm going to try to get my $10 out of Joe. Friday evening, that's the day of my obligation. I'm going to come back with a new plan. I'm going to say, now, Dan, I don't know whether I'm going to give him $10 or not, and that's what I was going to pay you. And I can't sell this thing. And if you don't want it, here's what I'll do. Here's the thing I was going to buy this coming week with $10. I'm not going to buy that this week. And I'll get the money on a certain date, and I'll give it to you. Now, Dan might not like that, and he might say, it's the last time I loaned him $10. But... I mean, that's just prerogative. See, because he's supposed to learn too. Okay? But I maintain my integrity in His eyes. Why? Because I do what I say I do, or I let Him know why I'm not doing it, and I let Him know what I'm learning and what I'm going to do about it. That's integrity. Now, all of us, to a degree, are failing in this area. I'm failing in this area. Some of you are failing in this area. But you know, bless your hearts, I sometimes get the impression that some folks aren't even trying. not even in the ballpark here. There are some people who have the attitude that Christian people especially, in doing business with each other. Oh, my. We get to the place where sometimes we think, you know, I'm a Christian and I'm serving God, and therefore you need to do me a favor. You know, I tell you, sometimes I encourage our people here who are in business here, just, you know, do business outside the church, because one of the best ways to get yourself discouraged, try to do business with your brothers and sisters in the Lord here in the church. And then somebody's going to think, hey, you know, I know you did that job for me, but, you know, I'm trying to serve the Lord and I don't make a whole lot of money. And, you know, you got this big company and everything, and, you know, you ought to take care of me here. You know what I'm saying? That's not integrity. That is not integrity. And people have the idea that, well, you know, old Duke Power some money down here, and man, they got all these millions, and, you know, build all these nuclear plants and that big expensive building. Doesn't matter if they get my $50 or not. You know, and I'll pay them later. You know, when? Well, the day before they come to throw the switch on you, that's when. You see? Oh, and be sure, by the way, when you send your bill in 3 weeks late, to put a tract in it. Huh? You understand what I'm saying? I know Christian people that do that. Let me tell you a few other ways you can maintain your integrity. When you sell your car, take all your Bob Jones stickers off of it. I see this over all this time, on this side of town all the time. Here's some guy with a 3-day beard and a cigarette hanging out of his lip, and he's going down to some old beat up, rusty car, and on one side it says, you know, Haskins for Congress, and on the other side it says WMUU, and in the middle it's got Rock 101 and this kind of stuff. If you get rid of your car and you put those stickers on that car, you're giving your testimony away. Don't give your testimony to somebody else. If you want to put that stuff on your car, that's fine, as long as you've got it. Now, when you sell them, you get them off of there. I'm serious about that. And don't put them on there in the first place. You're not going to obey the law. You see? We all need to be careful about that, don't we? Serious. I get convicted about those kinds of things regularly when I think, you know, people recognize my car and I got that license plate and all that stuff on there, and I think, here I am, you know, going around to some corner on two wheels and thinking, man, I'm gonna... You know, that's convicting. That's what I'm talking about. You understand what I'm saying? You and I need to guard ourselves to have integrity. If we're going to speak out for the Lord, it's more than just knowing the Romans Road. It's the way we live, too. It's the way we live and the testimony that we give to other people. The testimony we give to other people. And you never know who's seeing you. I know people come to this church and see me up here and then I don't see them. But you never know where I go in town. All over this town, people say, hello, Pastor Vaughn. And I look at them and think, who's that? You know? Now, sometimes, you know, I don't always wear a suit. Sometimes I'll be out cutting my grass and working in my garden. And I got up that day, it's my day off, and I just decided I'm just not going to shave that day. So I hadn't shaved, and I'm looking kind of grubby. And I didn't want to comb my hair, and so I just put my hat on. You know? And then I decide, oh, no, I didn't pick up my laundry. And so I'll go to pick up my laundry, and then, you know, I'll stop by the Revco or something like that. And inevitably, people think of me as a preacher, you know, and I don't look like one at the moment. And I'll get myself in some situation where it's a bad testimony. I don't think I'll cut my grass in a suit, but by the same token, I do say that we need to be careful about guarding our testimony, guarding our appearance. Why? Because it's not really our testimony, it's the Lord's. Integrity. Are we what we are expected to be? If you walk across the floor, you expect that floor to have integrity. That means you expect it to hold your weight. You expect it to do what it was designed to do. If you sit down in a chair, you expect that chair to hold your weight. You expect it to have integrity. If a person calls himself a Christian, you expect him to have Christian integrity. You expect him to do what he said he would do and not be pressing the loopholes and trying to find ways to get around it. Integrity. Do you have it? Do you want it? Are you working on it? Here's how you get it. Make a commitment. Everybody's got to make commitments. Work as hard as you can to keep that commitment. Let the person know as soon as you find out you're not going to be able to do it. And learn from it so that you don't keep making commitments that you can't keep. Okay? Simple, simple steps. How desperately we need it. Anybody here get under conviction besides me tonight? Anybody in here get reminded of two or three things you got to go talk to somebody about besides me? Look, I hope we never get to the place where we feel like we have to be perfect before we can share these things with each other. But we need to be moving toward perfection. All of us. Let's pray. Father, help us to be people of integrity. Help us to do what's right. Help us to walk in the path of truth and to have integrity. And I pray that we would keep our commitments and be faithful about them in Jesus' name. Amen.